It's all about the Pantene's, baby. Well, hello, and welcome to the first official episode of the show nobody asked for, but here we are doing it anyway.
Few people actually want it.
Well, okay, but it sounds but it's a much better tagline. It's a show nobody wanted, but we're doing it anyway.
That's true.
It's 2.5 bins. So what is
it? I never asked for a show.
Yeah, well, somebody asked for a show.
Well, but my question was going to be, if we're talking about the show nobody asked for, but here it is. We just did it. It's called The Lotus Effect. We air it at about 5 p.m. Eastern, yeah. 4 Central when we're on time.
Yes, exactly. Well, but I think it's this. I took this opportunity to pull out the origin clip for this, because if you don't know, right, we don't know what a bin is. Although if you're probably listening to this, you probably do. But in case you happen to stumble across this in some time zone or whatever, if you're a longtime fan, right, you might remember this clip of a certain show. You might remember this clip from 2014. This was a Jennifer O'Connor, who was a former IRS attorney who now was working for the Obama White House at the time, struggled to remember the names of her former IRS colleagues before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee on what she knew about the efforts to gather together emails that the Republicans were seeking as they were investigating the IRS's targeting scandal. Now, in one conversation with Representative Jason Chaffetz, a Republican out of Utah, O'Connor had trouble remembering who she was dealing with at all during her 6 months at the IRS. Chaffetz started asking her who she worked with and who reported to her.
I want to talk about who reported to you. Name some people that reported to you.
I think that the best way to do it is to...
I know, but you're here in front of Congress. You knew this was going to happen. Name one person that you interacted with. Anybody in the IT arena?
I didn't actually interact directly with people in the IT arena. There was somebody whose name was... I can't even remember his last name. I think his first name may have been Ben.
So a guy named Ben, a dude named Ben. Who else?
I don't recall.
You were there 6 months. You had people around you that would jump at your very presence. What? Who are these people?
Yeah, who are these people? Well, actually, I wanted to end with who are these people. So, but that's what a dude named Ben is, right? It comes straight from our Congress critters. That's where it came from. It even made a nice little jingle for a while, right? And so we have three people here on the mic that have either spent time in IT or are in school to join the ranks to do so, which means between the three of us on the mic, you have, well, 2.5 bins, or 2 bins and a half a Bernadette, if you prefer. But first, you have me, and this is where I'm going to do my little introduction here. Now, I've been officially this month, I've been in the cybersecurity industry 30 years, employed in the cybersecurity industry, but I've been doing computer stuff a lot longer.
Well, first, who the fuck are you?
I'm Phoneboy. Right? You have me, Phoneboy, right? And the cybersecurity industry did not exist 30 years ago, but something else became mainstream 30 years ago, and it would be the internet. And it's something I accessed in the high school as early as 1990, actually. This was before web browsers and stuff existed. And I did go to school in the Silicon Valley during the early 90s, and our school had access to the internet. And so I had a front row seat to the early days of the internet as it was being created in real time, even before a lot of people knew about it. I mean, I remember when the San Jose Mercury News being on the internet was a thing, right? And shortly after graduating college, I ended up at a company that was selling and supporting a new kind of product for its time, a network firewall. Now, something that you definitely need. Organizations, started connecting their office networks, which had no security at all, by the way, to the internet. And I was one of the guys you'd called when you needed help because it wasn't working or the documentation on how to configure something was not good. And while my particular job at this company has evolved over the years, I mean, they call my job marketing, but I can assure you I still deal with IT all the time. And it's only because, I mean, I still help people with my day job's products in various capacities, and they're all IT people, right? So, but I also have to deal with the business of IT, both inside and outside my day job. And yes, I do web development from time to time. And I've seen some
But we
shit.
Don't hold it against him.
No, please don't hold it against me. But
well, don't also remember the fact that you've not written one, but two books.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I've been doing this a little while. So that's as much as I'll say about it. I mean, I try to keep the day job out of it because reasons, but I'm also well known in that space, and that actually creates a problem at times. But anyway, that's me in a nutshell, and I think that's kind of my Ben thing. So, Rye, I guess people probably know you anyway, but just do a short version.
I hope people don't know me that well, but so I got into from the programming side.
First of all, who the fuck are you?
I'm Sir Ryan Bemrose. I'm an expert.
Yes, you are. We know what experts are.
My credentials are that I say I'm an expert, and you can judge me based on what I speak, but which is how you should be judging every expert, because if somebody comes on and they say they're an expert and they say something completely retarded, then they probably have exactly the same credentials. I started coding on my Tandy 1000 back in probably 1985 with the operating system came with a basic interpreter in it. I pretty much never stopped. I came up after college with through a large operating system vendor, doing a lot of systems programming deep in the bowels of the system, because ultimately I got into coding because I decided that computers were easier to figure out than people.
Which you're not wrong about that.
Which remains true to this day. And deep in the bowels of the operating system, I didn't have to ever deal with or even acknowledge that an end user existed. In fact, you remember Windows Vista? You're welcome.
Yeah. Yes. I do remember Windows Vista. I'm trying to forget it.
It was a horrible version.
Yeah. To this day, I continue to follow technology and pay attention to technology. And every once in a while, I do a technology podcast. Part of the name for this show came from a show that I did for a good 4 years, a little while back, called Grumpy Old Ben's, which is technically on hiatus. It may, you know, may come back for an episode or two. We don't know. To this day, I don't actually work as a programmer right now, but I do still live the life. I do coding in my free time. And, more importantly, you know, I don't trust my printer. My fridge is a dumb fridge that doesn't even have a screen on the front. My TV has never seen a Wi-Fi connection. My phone stays in a drawer because I am that technologist who is not, I'm not the tech enthusiast that you see in every other show or every, you know, every single tech podcast is, oh, look at this, Apple came out with a new thing and I just have to cream myself over it. No, I'm the guy who's been there, done that, and no thanks, you probably don't need it, and here's how it's going to harm you.
Yeah, I bet you're having a field day with this AI shit.
AI is the only, I'm doing research for the show today, it's the only thing that anybody writes about.
It's you can't get text to talking about either. It's gross.
Oh my God, yeah, I know. So yeah, there might be, there's probably going to be some AI rants in this, for sure. But
probably.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess, Phoenix, you have to explain yourself, I think, now.
Yes, I am the one, the only, the princess of profanity, Phoenix. I'm trying to shy away from that a little bit, especially when it comes to the 2.5 Ben's persona. I want to be more respected and seen as not just a foul-mouthed podcaster that is extremely opinionated on our flagship show. I would actually like to be seen as the brains that I actually am and have, as half of the 2.5 Ben's of this show. I actually did not start anywhere near technology. A lot of people know, but those who don't, who may be listening to the content we put out for the first time, by way of 2.5 Ben's, I started out as doing everything from nursing school to driving an 18-wheeler. And about 3+ years ago, I met this amazing man that is sitting to the left of me.
Who, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Who?
Yeah, I'm awesome. I know.
Yes, exactly. I actually did meet both of you two Bens at the same time.
Well, yeah, because we were no agenda podcast alum. In his house. Remember?
No. That's not what I mean. I mean, as No Agenda alum, when I got hit in the mouth and I was hanging out in the chat, I of course saw Sir Bemrose and yourself, and of course the podcast that led to the relationship that bloomed between us, saw you in. But I kind of became acquainted with both of you around about the same time because of your agenda, or your affiliation, I should say, with No Agenda. And I didn't hold it against you, still don't. But I've always been fascinated by the two of you because the conversations that you've all had were so educated and intelligent. And 3 years ago, I could barely work my smartphone before I met you, let alone thinking about becoming a dudette named Bernadette.
I can still barely work my smartphone.
That's only because you leave it in the drawer.
Well, trust me, you don't want to work the smartphone. No.
The dumb phones are terrible.
You know, that's another, by the way, that's another part of my past that's probably worth interest, probably worth mentioning. Yeah, I actually worked for a smartphone company at one time, quite literally. I kind of watched the smartphone, you know, then Apple comes up and it's just like, you're just sitting here looking at this and I'm going, I saw this was a security nightmare before Apple made the iPhone, and it's still a security nightmare. So
I have a question. Is that part of who I am? No. So sit there and hush.
No.
Sir, for a change, actually engage your mute button on purpose. Anyways, so long story short, why am I here? Yeah. How do I... No, that actually wasn't catty. I was just giving him shit. But at the same time, how am I here? Why am I here? Why am I half a Ben or half a Bernadette? Because Phoneboy is an amazing individual who showed me how interesting technology can be and spurred me to new heights, which inspired me to start college, which I currently am doing. So I have another year before I have my degree and can be considered a more or less full Bernadette, dudette named Bernadette. And so that's how I got here to weigh in on and bring a little bit of content to the 2.5 Ben's platform.
And I think it's also important that we're trying to round things out, right? Because, you know, Ryan and I, we've seen it all. This is a lot of the stuff still new for you, right?
Yeah, which gives me an interesting perspective with what you all bring to the table, because I mean, I'm definitely not as in the know as the two of you are. So some of the stuff that I weigh in with may not be as valuable, and that's okay. I'm fine with being the comedic relief for now.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is that you're picking stuff up, and one of the things that I'm enjoying, you know, this is one of those things that I don't know if people do this in relationships or not, but I've been really like with her, like I've been just kind of watching her like get all of this stuff, and I'm actually really enjoying it. And much like your professor
shout out to Professor McGobgob at Roan State. He is an amazing individual. We absolutely adore, or at least I adore, learning what his many years of knowledge brings to the education. Because he's not learning from him is not like sandpaper fucking. It's not dry. It's not boring. It's engaging. He is engaging. He is animated and passionate. And just shout out to all of the IT professors out there who actually give a damn about their students and who want to see us succeed in this ever challenging environment where AI is taking a lot of jobs. And I'm not going to say enriching things, truly.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think he's a good dude. I mean, I did get to meet him when you did your presentation. I think he wanted me to speak in the
he
class.
Does.
Yeah, which I probably
all
would
right.
Do.
Is that enough of the love fest now?
Yeah, that's enough.
I know,
love
right?
Fest.
Can we go explain to people why all the technology they get so excited about because their social media and the TV is showing them how awesome it could be? Why
let's
that technology is going to ruin your life?
Well, yeah,
let's go shit on it.
Let's go shit. But I have a little bit more. Okay, so that's the love fest. We're only going to do this the first time because I figured that was probably enough of always doing an intro.
Thank God.
So with all that background, we're still trying to work out the format of the show. We're just bringing stories to the forum for discussion amongst the three of us, each with our own unique point of view, as we talked about. And we're not aiming for any particular release cycle. We'll release it whenever we have time to record something, which right now will probably happen on Saturday nights because that's when we're all doing stuff anyway. So we did record a pilot a couple weeks ago, but we didn't apparently record.
Well, you recorded some of a pilot.
I recorded some of it, but the problem is that my backup recording fucked off. And anyway, so now we're not.
Well, not only that, but the episode that will be released of all of about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So we should probably hand it to Sir Bemrose and let him put it out as an ATM episode because that's about the length of his episode.
Oh, jeez.
20 to 30 minutes. Yeah. But yeah, it was a whole lot of us talking to a ghost Sir Bemrose.
Exactly. But Now, however, somebody did listen to it because Cotton Gin, I want to recognize Cotton Gin for his $10 yes. donation for, he thought it was a great thing. And so we said, fine, we'll do it again. And I've already secured 2.5bens.com as a domain. And once I have album art and all the other shit that you got to do to submit a podcast, I'll do that. But right now I'm just going to so this episode, I'll just publish it on the Lotus Effect feed and, you know, it'll be a special.
Again, we're still trying to get our sea legs. I believe when we first started doing the Lotus Effect, Sir Bemrose was in charge of who got on the NA stream, and we had to do what, 4 episodes before we were considered for it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that was what it was. But in this case, to submit a podcast, you have to have at least 1 episode published. So that's kind of, I think that's the requirement.
Right, but I think at
which
the
is
end
why
of the
I
day,
published episode 0 when we started our podcast. But
right, and I think at the end of the day, for all of you who bitch and complain about our flagship show, The Lotus Effect, well, now you know who you can blame, because if it weren't for Sir Bemrose, we would not have gone further than the 4 episodes necessary.
Yeah, or something along those lines. Oh, we may have done
something. And I would like to apologize to everyone out there who has to listen to this day in and day out now.
Seriously, well done. All right, anyway, so I think it's time to talk stories. I apologize. Okay, so we've done our little intro, and like I said, we don't really have any segments or anything like that. So, Ryan, I'm going to let you offer a story first here.
All right. Well, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go down and I'm just going to one of the places that I go, and I'm not going to tell you where it is because I don't want to be embarrassed by it. But when I troll for tech stories, I go to several places and I just that are aggregating pages and just look at, OK, what are people really liking? What are they, you know, thumbs up on? What stories are getting a lot of popular activity? And so I'm just going to read some headlines here. This is what I have to sift through. YouTube creators unaware Google uses their videos to train AI. Israel-Iran conflict unleashes wave of AI disinformation. Andreessen Horowitz backs AI startup. MIT something using generative AI tools. MIT student prints AI polymer masks to restore paintings. How teachers are fighting AI cheating with handwritten work. Are you seeing a theme here?
Yeah, I'm seeing a theme. Yeah, I try to.
I am sick of AI.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, the only reason we play AI, the only reason we cover AI stories on the Lotus Effect is for us to poop on, basically. Yeah, I need to.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm here as well. Yeah, so, all that said, I figured I'd go ahead and start with an AI story. What did I got? I should probably bring up my notes page.
That's usually a good idea.
Yeah, I sound pretty freaking professional, don't I?
Noob.
Okay, here's an easy one to slip into. Google is using everything that is uploaded to YouTube to train their AI, the Gemini model, and their VO3, which used to be known as DeepMind.
Ooh, they're basically anything you put on the internet, they're training their AI with. You mean like OpenAI is doing with ChatGPT?
So the article, of course, was poorly written because tech journalists, as a rule, the only real thing you have to do to be a tech journalist is you have to cream whenever somebody says the word Apple. But they didn't do a really great job of giving me the interesting bits, so I had to dig in a little bit. But so here's what's going on. Google is training the VO3 model. And one of the things that they're training it with, because it will be one of the models that is capable of doing video. In fact, Google is pretty much going to be creating deepfakes as a service with this model. And they are training it on arguably everything on YouTube, or at least that is what their terms of service says they can do. We don't actually know, of course, what they're using. When this particular story came from CNBC, and when a reporter actually went out and asked a Google PR person, hey, are you really doing this? They said, well, we're only using a subset of videos. They did not say at any point how many videos, or how the subset is selected or what's going on. The stat that I pulled out of the story, which is completely unverified because I don't care that much, 20 billion videos are on YouTube right now. That seems like quite a lot, in fact.
Yeah, well, it didn't. Okay, when did YouTube open? It's like 20 years ago, right? Because I remember.
Yeah, actually, it's been a while.
Yeah, I remember when it was Google. I remember. You remember the days of Google Video? Yeah, I remember those days. Because this is before Google bought YouTube.
But you know, funny thing about YouTube is, early on, people were uploading like, you know, a video every 10 seconds. And then about 5 years in, it was more like 100 videos per, you know, minute, or at some point it was like 100 videos per second or something. I don't know.
Oh, you mean TikTok?
Yeah, my numbers are completely off, but there's been exponential growth in the amount of videos put on Google. And just in case you think that would plateau, because I don't know, 10 years or so ago when YouTube became the de facto video platform for everybody on planet Earth, and every single person who has a smartphone has a one-click ability to just send their likeness to Google to store forever and make AI out of, not that people knew that, you would think it would plateau once they reached everybody, which was many years ago. But no, the exponential growth continues with the number of YouTube videos. The stat that I saw, and again, this is totally unverified because I am not a tech news reporter. I am a tech news pundit who hates tech news. There is more YouTube videos in the last 3 years than in the previous 20.
I'm not surprised by that, because that's also why there's, you know, what is podcast index is like 5 million podcasts or something. Yeah, it's easy for a couple of people with microphones to record their shit and put it on the internet for people to listen and call it a podcast.
Okay, so
but the limiting factor to that is human beings can only speak into a microphone so fast, and like even if you're Ben Shapiro, there's only so many words you can get out. But AI enables people to put a lot more content up than they ever could before.
But that's the problem, Ryan, is that it's not genuine content. It's literally a machine that's writing this shit, and they're just slapping their name on it saying, yep, this is my content. It's the most disgusting thing. It's what I've been talking about on the other show, about the fact that when you listen to something, you can totally tell it's AI generated because of the fact it's the same damn words they're using every single show to describe it. It's like they only have a small subset of adjectives that this model has been trained on, and they're recycling them every episode, no matter what they're talking about.
Yeah, there's just so much AI content on YouTube, and I don't spend a lot of time on YouTube, but I occasionally there's certain things that you can find them on YouTube, because it's also kind of the default audio platform. If you want to go find a record or something to listen to, and you don't want to pay for Spotify or Apple Music, what do? You go load it up on YouTube, right? I mean, it's the same, you know.
Let me ask you. It's kind of a trade-off of one to the other, because you don't want to have to go through those absolutely annoying advertisements every 10 seconds when you're trying to listen to said song. You obviously are going to be paying for the premium subscription to YouTube.
Or use YTDLP.
Nailed the reason why I don't use YouTube for most
things. And that's cool. Like, for sure. Yeah, however,
it's good for pulling clips, I will say that. But
it is, but my point is, okay, to make the argument that, oh, well, you know, they'll go to YouTube instead of spending the money on Apple Music or Spotify, I don't really feel like it is, because, again, if you want to queue up an album or something else and you don't want every 10 to 20 seconds having an advertisement, you're going to pay that roughly 9, 12, 20 bucks a month.
Yeah, it's 20 bucks. It's more like 20 bucks a month these days. Yeah.
20 bucks a month. So, I mean, I know you don't have the answer off the top of your head, but in order to subscribe to just Apple Music, if you're, you know, a Tom Collins member,
it's roughly the same amount.
Exactly. So I don't feel like that's a valid argument that they're doing it on YouTube as opposed to doing it on Apple Music.
I didn't say they weren't doing it on Apple Music. I'm just saying that's how the Apple Music, you have to pay on YouTube.
YouTube is free as long as you can put up with every 10 to 20 seconds having some drug ad or some other bullshit spewed upon you.
Okay, but I've got another rant here, just kind of related to that. Is that at some point, right?
Oh, another one. Do you want to stop your current one for? Oh,
No, just exactly. Yeah, good job. But the rant, no, but it's about advertising because I think it's because I do marketing for a living, right? This is, it's part of my job. So I think about advertising. I'm going, everybody's advertising anything and everything all of the time. How in the fuck is anybody supposed to hear anything? Because everybody's talking all the time and nobody, and it's all, you know, it's all this just big a fucking attention grab. And I kind of wonder at some point, you know,
for the most part, they don't. You know what the conversion rate is for advertisement on the modern web?
Yeah, less than 1%.
It's something like 1 in 10,000 ads shown turns into any kind of interest in your brand whatsoever. And people just accept that.
Yeah, because at this point, it's all just background noise to them. They're so used to hearing it because, like you said, it's everything all of the time. You're constantly being barraged by something. And then we wonder why there's such a high rate of mental illness because... Again, the homophobia, or not homophobia, the... Fuck.
The nomophobia.
The nomophobia, son of a bitch. The nomophobia, that's why it exists.
Yeah, fear because... of faggot technology.
That's what it is. It's homonomophobia. Fear of faggot technology.
That's being written down, I can tell you that.
But that's it. Is the fact that because people need to be, quote, distracted or have some kind of content in their ears or in front of their faces at all times, that is where we get the, you know, homonomophobia.
Exactly. So, yeah, homonomophobia. Jesus Christ.
The official title of this show, yeah, homonomophobia, okay, for this episode.
I want to back up a little bit. There was something you said in there about how the content being uploaded is... AI generated content, and that you implied that's a bad thing. And I don't necessarily disagree with that assessment, but I want to back up and ask a quick question. And that is, do you think that YouTube is worse off for being flooded with low quality AI generated content versus the way it was before being flooded with low quality human generated content?
At the very least, I can respect the fact that it was being flooded by low-quality human-generated content because there was actually some quality within the mass of shit that was being put out. The problem,
well, there's always some quality in there.
Well, yeah, there is.
True. But the problem you have now is it's like you went from 0 to 100 with this because now anybody can just type like 3 words of... text into this thing and it's going to produce you a, you know, 15 to 30 minute podcast story or whatever. All you have to, I mean, seriously, I have a program on my computer, my tablet, whichever, because of course I'm an Apple cult member, that literally all I have to do is add a few prompts into it and this thing will write me a story. And I'm wholly against it. Because I feel like if you're going to call yourself a content creator, it actually has to be your content. It can't just be a couple of catchphrases that you throw into an LLM that spits out a script for you. To me, that's completely disingenuous.
And this is why you're never going to publish 400 best-selling books per year.
You know
because
what?
Because you have standards.
The funny part of that is, right, just as much as you're not worried about missing out on all the shit online, yeah, I'm not worried about publishing those 400 books of content because I know the stuff that I do put out is being produced genuinely by me, a real human being, despite all of the jokes about being a bot or an AI. I know that I am flesh and blood and that which I put out is content that I have created, not some shit that I've loaded into an LLM and hoped it spits out something coherent.
I just want to make it clear with regards to YouTube and everything else, that the internet, for as long as I've been online, which has frankly been quite a few decades now, the internet obeys Sturgeon's Law. And when people say, oh, it's being flooded with crap content, well, everything has always been flooded with crap content. You're familiar with Sturgeon's Law, right?
For yeah,
anybody
I'm
who's
not
familiar.
But just, Sturgeon's I'm
Law,
not.
Okay. Go ahead.
No,
Sturgeon's law states that 90% of everything is crap or shit or however you know, depending okay. on whether you want a clean rating from Apple.
No. We're assuming an explicit rating. I'm marking
it. Oh, of
yeah.
course.
So 90% of everything is crap. Now, in the internet, you may want to quibble 90%, 99%, 99.99999, 12 sigma percent. I don't know. But the vast majority of everything, no matter what, you get a big pile of content in any location and it obeys the idea that the vast majority of it is crap, which means navigating the internet is almost entirely a problem of filtering. And search engines for a long time did a great job, right up until someone at Google went, you know, the worse our results, the more people spend, more time people spend looking at our ads, and just kind of stopped bothering to make their search engine good.
Yeah, and now everybody's using AI as a search engine because
which
it's
quicker, which
faster.
Is a lot worse. So don't get me wrong. Filtering is a big problem, but that's your problem. Is there is always going to be the very existence of shit AI videos all over YouTube does not bother me. What bothers me is if I don't have the ability to find the few gems amidst all of the crap. And this is not a new problem. And that's the thing that I keep seeing every time I see an AI story. Somebody's like, oh my gosh, AI, it's like this brand new thing and we've never had it before. And freak out. It's not new. The problems are never new. The problems are, hey, here's this problem that humans have been dealing with for centuries, and now it happens to intersect this new computer technology. And so, you know, people dumping a ton of AI videos into YouTube doesn't bother me if I don't have to see them. The question is, can I find any good videos in there? And, you know, for the effort put in, and the fact that I don't pay for YouTube and I don't want to watch ads, and I made a conscious decision 20 years ago that I'm going to avoid ads. I just keep them out of my life, which is, by the way, not as easy as it sounds. I just don't go to YouTube for that reason. But if somebody that I know, who I trust, links me a channel or a video and is like, hey, watch this, then I'll go ahead and grab that because it might not be crap.
You know, like Ben Lich's channel on disc golfing, which is awesome.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, but I wasn't going to out him on that because I really don't need people searching for the word Bemrose on YouTube and finding images of fat guys throwing discs around.
Too late. Once you upload it to the internet, it's there forever.
It's your new permanent record.
That's right. People might actually see the fantastic fashion sense that Sir Bemrose has as opposed to, you know, his little big brother who can't dress himself to save his life.
So back to my original story, Google has started, and the story in air quotes, as CNBC is concerned, and then TechSpot, who picked it up. I actually spotted it because it was on TechSpot, and then I realized TechSpot was just ripping the story off CNBC, which is very, very common to do.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. They linked to the original story. I was able to find it. But as far as CNBC was concerned, the story here is, oh my gosh, these YouTube creators are uploading their videos and they don't realize that Google is using it to train their AI. And the angle that they took, because CNBC is a little bit business focused, the angle they took was the copyright angle, which is a whole separate topic. I'm not even certain we need to get into, but they were saying, you know, if you upload to Google, if you upload to YouTube, Google is going to infringe your copyrights by making AI video. I don't even think that the copyright infringement is the big problem. I am more concerned with the idea that if I have a channel, I don't, so don't search for it. But if I have a channel where I sit in front of a microphone with headphones on, talking and, you know, doing a show that should be a podcast because there's no need for video, but people put it on YouTube, then they, you know, how many hours of content do they have of me staring directly into, you know, center frame, staring into the video or the camera, whatever. What's the device that records video? Bemrose needs more liquor.
Well, that, yeah, anyway, always.
You train an AI model on that, and pretty soon it becomes a deepfake factory. It becomes, you know, it is the simplest trick for the AI models to pull off, to take that image of me center frame staring directly into the camera and make it say anything they want. And I'm not saying Google is going to deepfake me. I'm saying Google is building the tools for anyone in the world to deepfake my voice, which means what you're hearing right now might not be my real opinion. Somebody might be telling you lies and using my voice to do it.
Yeah, and then somebody might be AI generated videos that are uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Which, yeah, that's, and so, see, this, yeah, yeah. The, and actually, again, I have a cogent point. We, so a couple of years ago, we had a, I took Phoenix to a work, the work conference I have to go to every year. And yeah, we met with, I will say the absolutely the smartest person I know, and probably has, and she has a lot to do with the career that I have. I'll leave it at that, but she's absolutely one of the smartest people I know. And on any topic I've been, yeah, I mean her, let's put it this way. I feel dumb compared to her and her kids, you know, and her, and anyway, they're all smart people, but we
put it this way. She's so important and intelligent. She has her own Wikipedia page.
Yeah, she does have a Wikipedia page. And anyway, with long story short, we were talking. This I don't think actually you that wasn't in that was it in that discussion was another discussion. But anyway, she
no the discussion you're thinking of was actually held recently. I had nothing to do with it. Yes, I had my own personal meet and greet. Yeah, however, the statement that you were thinking of did not involve me. It was, I believe, at the most recent year's conference.
Okay, it may have been anyway. So the point is that and this is somebody who again knows a lot about everything and anyway she said you know what, we could create a system where people right will actually do that, well, where you can actually verify that a video is not AI generated, that it was actually a legitimate video. Well, you know, we can do all of this, right? This is all possible to do. But here's the reality: nobody cares, right? Nobody cares about the truth. I mean, that came out of her mouth, right? And like I said, this is a very intelligent person who can see how people interact or whatever. And yeah, I think based on what we're if we I mean, not that we're a political show, Progo, but you know, but we
I am.
Well, no, but I mean, this isn't a political. As I say, we make political statements, but this isn't a political show. But if we look at the politics, right? People are on their team, right? They vote red or blue or whatever, you know, pink or whatever, you know, team they want to vote for, right? And they don't think for themselves. They just simply accept what is being done. And
if you need an example of that, reference the mask mandate of 2020.
Yeah, the whole COVID-1984 was the best example of the fact that most people don't really care about the truth. They don't think for themselves, right? And we can shout the truth from the rooftops, and guess what? Nobody's going to listen to it. Or very few people.
I only shout it into a microphone.
Well, so do I. But
and some people actually listen to it, but then
yeah,
again.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I think that's as much as. So the question is, how do you know if something is true? If you want to find out, how do you find out, right? If this is actually like Jordan Peterson or if this is an AI generated thing, we don't really know.
By the way, how do you know if something's true? We used to have, like, this is even in the days before computers, we used to have this tool called the scientific method. Nobody learns that anymore. We also used to have this thing called critical thinking, which doesn't come naturally to most people, but it can be taught. It's not taught anymore. The idea of being skeptical when somebody comes up and says, oh, yeah, AI is going to make life better. Yeah, citation needed, motherfucker.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, not only that it's citation needed, but yeah, we're just assuming that whatever they say is going to be the case is true. But this is I think, you know, a proper dude named Ben, right? And this is because, you know, part of what we have to do is dudes named Ben sometimes is we don't know what's going on. They call us in because shit's fucked up, right? And so we're trying to figure out what actually happened, right? So we're looking at all the data, and sometimes we don't know if we don't know where to troubleshoot, we don't know where the problem is, right? So we say that this is why end users throw up their hands and go, I don't know what the problem is, and I don't even know where to begin. So I've tried everything and it doesn't work, right? That's where the statement that comes from. But, you know, part of what we do in IT is we have to kind of go through and, you know, make a, you know, and
have you noticed how rarely they actually have tried everything?
Yeah, like I said, they tried everything that they know how to do, which is nothing. Yeah. So
I tried everything I could think of. Well, what did you think of? Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah, I run into this all the time. So,
but if I may, as a
did you
budding...
try turning it off and back on again?
Exactly. I actually just got a shirt that basically says things to that effect. But the point I was going to make as a budding IT pro is, I think one of the problems we're not looking at here in this whole AI situation is people need to demand more out of their content. that's another problem we're running into. Why is this content allowed to become so rampant on the platforms? It's because people don't give a shit. Like Phoneboy said, they don't care. Is it noise? Does it distract me from what's currently going on in my real world that I don't want to focus on? The answer to that is usually yes. Ergo, I don't give a damn if a AI created it or if a human created it. It's in my ears. It's distracting me from the shit my life is. That's essentially the problem.
I absolutely agree, and there's another entire conversation the flood of low quality content most people put into their ear and eye holes all the time is a problem. But there are two approaches to it. One is you flood yourself with higher quality content. The other is you go outside and touch some grass.
How dare you imply that people actually disconnect from their technology long enough to be part of the outside world?
I'm not saying it's going to happen.
That's such a radical theory.
Yes. Yes, it is. And that's one of the reasons why I'm the only person you know who has ever accomplished anything even close to that. And even now, I'm sitting in front of some screens with a microphone in my face rather than going outside and doing something that calms me down.
Well, and Cotton Gin brought up a good point in the chat. He said, third option, you start making the content.
That's we're doing.
That's the whole reason why we're doing what we're doing. That's the whole reason why Lotus After Dark has taken so long to come to fruition, because there's so many different options, because I absolutely refuse to allow an AI to do any part of the content creation for that show. It just feels very disingenuous as we sit here and talk about
it. Your Phoneboy AI is very effective.
Phoneboy AI.
All right, I might have to write that down as a potential show title. So, all right. So I think
you should probably. I think we've truly chewed on the AI content thing. Unless you have anything else on that, Rye.
I got nothing but AI. So you know, somebody else should probably go.
Well, no.
Unless you want to talk. I'm just going to drop a headline. I didn't even want to talk about this story. I didn't even want to read this stupid story, and I did because I hate myself. Pope Leo XIV is making the threat of AI to humanity a key issue of his legacy.
Wow, the number of fucks we have to give about that, I have a feeling are subterranean, but nonetheless.
Well, someday we may talk about the danger of AI to humanity, but I just thought that was a joke.
Well, you know, actually, it's really interesting because you mentioned that exact phrase of the threat of the threat of AI to humanity. We featured that in one of the stories about people are saying no to AI on the show that we just did, Lotus Effect episode 188, because a lot of people, I think, are waking up to the fact this isn't the future. This isn't the great, wonderful promise that they said it was. They're starting to realize that they've bought a bill of goods.
The only thing that I'll drop on this, and I could drop the topic entirely, is that people think that the danger of AI is like in the Terminator, where the computer is going to become sentient and get control of all of the war machines and then nuke all the cities, and we'll all be, you know, either dead or living in a post-apocalyptic thing where robots are hunting us down. That is great science fiction. That is not how AI is going to kill humanity. It's more like Black Mirror, where people very willing, or Brave New World, where people very willingly plug their brains into a computer and then all of the gray matter leaks out and then it doesn't even matter. They lose the capability to be human. That is where AI could actually harm people.
I don't think
and
people are realizing that,
it,
though.
Because the fix for it is for the people who actually want to keep their humanity, unfucking plug.
That's the ultimate answer. There's nothing past that. The solution to all of this is unplug. Go outside, look at something other than a computer screen, because, and I mean, we're all yourself and Phoneboy and myself, we're all basically in the same age range. We all remember the
okay boomer.
Yeah, no worries, you are too. The dystopianness of it with iRobot and you know, like you said, Terminator, you know, in our generation. You're right. That's not what ultimately is going to be. The computers are going to become sentient and all of a sudden your blender is going to be fucking holding you hostage. It isn't that simple. It's literally.
Although with paywalls, it kind of might. But,
yeah. The fact of, and I agree with you completely, the more we give up to AI, the further behind we are falling intelligence-wise. And really, all you have to do is look at the current generation that cannot handle literally anything. They can't handle doing their jobs. They can't do math in their head. They cannot handle life. That's why I said they have to have the constant distraction of that cell phone, that fondle slab of some kind, that computer screen in front of their eyes, whether it be a television, a computer, a tablet, a phone. It doesn't matter. They need that constant stimulation. Stimulization. It's my own word, I assure you.
But it works for me.
Yeah. You know, they need the constant stimulus because they can't handle reality. And that is... in agreement with you, that is what is going to ruin the world and how AI is going to take over, because it's literally dumbing people down to the degree that they don't have the ability to think for themselves. If they don't have a computer telling them exactly what to do, i.e. GPS, turn right now, you know, or
okay,
the TikTok or whatever it is, the brain rot is spreading.
This topic would be depressing me if I had the capacity for empathy. What do we got that isn't AI?
Okay, I have stuff that's not AI, although it is Microsoft related, because what I have is this. There are two secure boot exploits that are out there, and Microsoft is only patching one of them. So
one of them is Windows. What's the other one?
Yeah, well, actually, it's more than Windows, but the Windows itself, because this is something I think you're probably running into. Let's see. I'm not modifying anything at this point. All I'm saying is, yeah, cancel. Okay, it's trying to prompt me for stuff, but basically.
So, can I ask you a really quick question, Foam Boy and Sir Bemrose?
Yeah.
Do y'all care? Because I have three stories. After Foam Boy gets done, can I do two stories this week? Because I have a couple that are really going to incite chat, I believe.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, please.
Why wait until he's finished? Just interrupt.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
no, I actually want to hear what he's got. Like I said, we don't know what each other brings to the table for this. It's a cold reaction.
Yeah, it's meant to be a cold reaction. But this secure boot thing is so the whole. Okay, so the idea behind secure boot is you have all these drivers and you have all these things that we want to make sure that only authorized people can put their drivers in and load up the system and do things, right? So
the idea behind secure boot sounds really good on paper until you realize that companies like Microsoft and Intel design these products such that the authorized people who have the ability to write to your hardware are at Microsoft and Intel. The threat model from big corporations never includes the corporation itself. So that is why I'm skeptical when somebody says secure boot.
Yeah, well, and of course that created the whole, when they did this whole secure boot thing, you know, 10 plus years ago. Yeah, that was, Linux was like, wait a minute. You know, Linux wasn't part of this, and they had to do all of this stuff. And it's funny because the idea is that the drivers have to be signed with a cryptographic key. That's, you know, now if there's any security vulnerabilities in the generation or the private key gets compromised in a supply chain attack. Well,
which has happened over the years.
Yeah. So now, okay, all you've done is made it harder for somebody to inject malware, but it's not impossible, right? You've created this. So this is what we keep doing in the technology industry. This is why our friend Professor Ted was right. Right. We're taking problems that existed and created more problems and created more things. Right. This is what we do. Sadly, we're not trying to do this in IT, but it just seems like the business kind of goes that way. It's like it creates a lot of opportunities. Some of this stuff, no question, but it creates more problems. And there's more things to get off of. And I could read this whole entire thing. And I found this in Ars Technica. It's one of the places that still actually does halfway decent journalism.
You also just made me think of a quote that I got from one of my programming coworkers probably 20, 25 years ago. And it was about programming, but I think you'll understand is that every problem in computing can be solved by adding another layer of abstraction, except for the problem of too much abstraction.
Well, yes, of course.
And you know, things like, our bootloader is able to load drivers that we don't necessarily trust, where we is, you know, the corporation. Okay, then let's add another layer of abstraction. Let's put some cryptography, throw cryptography at it. Oh, well, people are doing a supply chain attack. Okay, well, let's throw some more security at the, and pretty soon what you have is just getting a bug fix out takes 4 months because of the number of layers of bureaucracy you got to go through because of all of these. Anyway.
And don't forget how fast you'll build a better mouse trap and they'll build a better mouse.
Yeah, this is that I've watched it's but it's funny because, of course, you talk to our incident response guys, the day job, and they pretty much all say the same thing. Yeah, it's the same 10 vulnerability. It's that OWASP top 10 and shit like that. Yeah, it's all it's pretty much every, you know, it's pretty much like what everybody gets compromised. These are known issues for the most part. Now, AI creates a whole nother set of issues that you've never concerned about. Right. But the reality that, yeah, these problems are well known. And yet we still have these problems. They haven't been solved by any technology out there because people will implement that. You know, it's not because the technology that they used to implement it is maybe bad or something. Well, right?
Maybe just another layer of abstraction will help.
Yeah, no kidding. Just another layer of abstraction. But to make the point about the certificate thing, now this is, and I'll read, this is from the Ars Technica piece, and it's a quote, right? So, because Microsoft's third-party UEFI-CA, a certificate authority, is trusted by almost all PC-like devices, an unrevoked vulnerability in any of the components verified with that key, well, allows you to break secure boot to load on an untrusted OS. There you go, right? So pretty much.
And suddenly we're right back to the point where nothing was encrypted. Everybody could load things into the kernel, except that now it takes a hell of a lot more CPU cycles to go through the motions of encryption that don't work rather than just having everything unencrypted. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Well, when you think about how many things we're finding out are just simply sitting there in plain text for everybody to read, just, you know, take a peek inside. There's no encryption. There's no hashes. Just plain text, clear text. Here you go. All the info you could ever want. Passwords, usernames, social security numbers, bank account. I mean, it doesn't fucking matter. They do not have any kind of good security. How many stories, Ryan, you see them when you're doing ATN. Damon and I see them when we're looking for stories for Lotus Tech Tips and 2.5 Bens. So even the last pass breach that I was talking about, where a fucking S3 bucket, just clear plain text, here's a whole bunch of username and passwords and all the stuff you need to completely fuck up somebody's day. When is the question I'm asking? When do they figure it out? And I know it's a rhetorical question.
Don't.
Yeah, they don't. You're right. That's why I said they, I know
they don't.
It's a rhetorical
there are
question.
A number of economic factors that are pulling against security, sanity, intelligence. And one of them is the very concept of agile programming, move fast and break things. That's not just a catchy slogan. That is in fact what they do. And
oh, you mean like CrowdStrike?
Yeah. The idea behind it is get the absolute minimal, least viable product up as soon as quickly as you possibly can. And then we'll iterate on that. And there is engineering debt that is necessarily built into the idea that you want to get, you know, start with your very first prototype and then never revisit the core design, just staple things onto it. That results in products that are incredibly difficult to secure. And agile programming has been the fad in Silicon Valley for 15 years. And that is one of the economic factors. Well, I mean, the simple fact is, if you're a C-suite level person at a Silicon Valley company, what you know is VC funds come in one side of this black box known as engineering, and out the other side comes a piece of software that behaves kind of like what we want it to do. And if you're at the C-suite level, you really don't think too much about what's going on inside that black box. And if you're at an engineer, it's not your job to prioritize. All of the people who prioritize, you know, we need to pay attention to you know, making this secure. We need to pay attention to making sure that it's maintainable. All that, like at the CEO level, when you say, I need to redesign this component to be more maintainable, more secure, and have, you know, more reliable. What that gets translated to at the management level is
the peanuts teacher.
I need
wah,
more
wah,
time.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. I need more time to create nothing, because we already have the product that does this. And now you're telling me you want to go off for 2 months to re-engineer something and come up with the exact same product, but we already have it. And time in at the C-suite level and is money. So what you're saying is you're planning on costing the company money to do nothing. That's what they see when you say, I want to go in and make it more secure, or I want to go in and make it more reliable. They don't see, if you're a manager in most of these companies, they do not value the engineering concept of design it so that it works well, because that just costs more time, which means more money. And they're like, if we can get out the fastest, simplest, they don't even care if it's stapled together with PHP and Node modules, and then you drop it into the kernel.
No, they're they like, don't okay. give a shit if it's going to break at the first update.
They don't care if in order to stand up an instance of the product, you have to bring in 200 different Node projects in order to, you know, just to play some stupid cards. They don't care. They're like, okay, so it's working. Done. So that is one of the engineering things that pulls away from reliability and is the fact that at the managerial level, quality is simply straight up cost, and you don't get anything out of it, because 99.8% of the time, everything works. You're not getting hacked, and therefore the time spent to try to add security is wasted.
Yeah, until you get hacked, like we've said before, and Foamboy has highlighted it, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, saith, Tyson's manager. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's exactly what it, or maybe it was Tyson himself, but that's exactly what it is. It's the, it'll never happen to me, we're just going to keep running on a shoestring until it breaks. And when it breaks, it's not the CEOs who said, we're not going to give you that extra couple of months to make sure the security is tight and that the vulnerabilities are mitigated. No. It's the IT guys. It's the people working in the pits and the shit that are the ones who is going to get coded in it when it goes tits up.
It's the dude's name, Ben, the real dude's name, Ben.
It's the engineers. And, you know, I come from a programming background. I don't know if it's necessary to make the distinction between IT and programming, but the only real difference is that the programmers are the ones who create the problems, and the IT people are the ones who have the headache from problems that most of the time, because you're not the one, even if you are capable of modifying the code, you usually don't have authorization. So the only thing you can do is be like, yes, I'll go ahead and reset this. Okay, I'll go ahead and handle this. I'll, you know, handle the customer tickets, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, trust me, I see this all the time, right? These are all business decisions that get made. And this is what we call moral hazard, right? The people that make the decisions don't necessarily suffer their effects.
And there's one other factor which happens all the time in Silicon Valley companies that definitely creates a tension and a pull away from software quality. And that is that all things being equal, the longer somebody has been a coder, the more expensive they are to keep on staff. And if you are trying to watch your bottom line because all you care about is maintaining the box where VC funds come in one place and finished web products come out the other, then you want to hire the absolute most fresh people right out of college because they don't ask for as much. And so, you know, if they know how to slam together Node modules, then what the hell? Why am I paying twice as much to this coder as 20 years and keeps telling me that it's going to take more time to be reliable when this dude straight out of college says, oh, yeah, I can get a prototype together in a week. Great. Ship it.
Right.
We just saved the company a ton of money.
Right. But it's as unreliable as most of the programming.
And that goes back to the problem that 99.7% of the time, the people making the decisions do not see reliability as a benefit.
No,
they don't see security as a benefit. It is straight up a cost thing. The engineers keep whining.
It's always about follow the money. You know that as well as I do, Rye. We learned that from the boys over on No Agenda. When you have to ask the question why, follow the money. That's all it comes down to. And so do you have more on that, Phone Boy?
No, I really don't. If you have some stories to bring, let's do it.
I've actually got some stuff that's probably going to trigger both of you, and I don't mind doing it.
Well, is that the whole reason?
About, I'm thinking about interrupting you and doing one of my stories again, just to keep going with.
No, please do. No, because you guys are on the vein of AI. And
no, I was honestly being a douche when I said that. So go.
Okay. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Love you, Rye. Appreciate that. I should have expected no less. I didn't see that one coming. You know, kind of like a blind hooker. Didn't see it coming. So this is probably gonna totally trigger the both of you, and I don't mind doing it. Because I know you guys are completely familiar with the whole two-factor login codes that are so fucking insecure because of the fact that they're going not from point A to point B, but going through a service. And of course, you know, people are using this for their email, their banking app, social media, whatever. And unfortunately, like it's, and of course you get the warning, you know, oh, don't share this, you know, da 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 da. But who do you, people don't know who's seeing this shit before it gets to you. What company it's going through, because we found this Fink Telecom Services. They are some of the worst. They're a Swiss outfit. And they have actually been linked to a lot of bad things that are happening. So, and I would love to hear, you know, you graybeards' opinion on this.
First of all, imagine for a moment that I try to avoid third-party services in my life as much as possible and tend to roll my own for a lot of this stuff, whether you think that's a good idea or not. And explain to me explain to the listeners, and I'll pretend like I already know, what you mean by authentication service.
All right. So an example of which is you log into your credit card if you have the app for your credit card company on your Fondle slab, and it asks you to, it will require you to authenticate with a code that's sent to you through your text messaging, SMS, which of course we know is so secure. That's why I said,
Write it on a bathroom wall.
Yeah, you might as well just put it on a banner and you know, post it on the internet and shit, because that's about how secure it is. But that's essentially what it is they will send you a code through your text message that you then input the code that they sent you, and it authenticates, yep, it's you. We can proceed with all of your private things like your account balances, your password, your username, whatever it happens to be. It's on plain display for anyone who wants to play man in the middle and intercept that two-factor authentication code. And the problem of which is that there is basically little to no security. I mean, again, let's just start with the fact that they're using SMS. It's a decades-old technology, and it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's stored in plain text. Is it not, Phone Boy?
I am not sure. Well, okay, yeah, the entire phone system from soup to nuts is about it. You know, remember the phone system was originally hacked with a fucking Captain Crunch whistle, right?
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, there's a reason that the magazine 2600 exists, because the 2600 hertz, and it's not just the Atari 2600, although the Atari 2600 had that name because of that, I think. But
you know, you say that like these people were complete idiots for not putting any security in, when honestly what that was absolutely the best security that existed at the time.
It was a
step in the rat race of every time you build a better mouse trap, they build a better mouse. That was one of the steps on that. I'm not going to say the engineers who made something that could be broken with a whistle were stupid or anything. They were just like, holy crap, that I didn't think this would happen.
No, but Phone Boy, how many years ago was it that you could break Ma Bell
I had friends in junior high school that were doing it. I mean, you kidding
okay,
me?
Okay, so you're going mid-80s, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly, like mid-80s, yeah. I mean, it was...
The point of the matter is, though, in 2025, SMS is the most insecure way to send messaging no matter what you do. There's zero encryption, zero hashing, zero any fucking thing. You basically just look at it, plain text, have a nice day, now we know what your
code is, we're trusting. Okay, so this is the trust model, right? Because this, you know, we talk about like end-to-end encryption in these services. They say, oh, you know, WhatsApp's end-to-end encrypted. Well, that doesn't really mean anything.
Well, funny you mentioned WhatsApp, yeah. Because it actually is one of the platforms...
One of the ends is Facebook, by the way.
Well, yes, Facebook too. Well, yeah, Meta.
Here's the thing. All right. So the thing is this, okay? Fink Telecom is managing, again, it's a Swiss outfit. They're managing a lot of this go-between shit that happens between your credit card company and you. And they have been found that they have been involved in government spy agencies, surveillance industry, or surveillance.
Yeah, next you're going to tell me there's gambling going on.
I know. It's fucking shocking, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and unfortunately, we know.
Some of the companies, honestly, that have dealt with this company are ones like Google, Meta, Amazon. There's some banks, Tinder and Snapchat. And you mentioned WhatsApp, them and Signal are also customers of this. And I mean, they have locations in more than 100 countries across five continents. The problem is that they've had breaches. You know, Fink's continued access to the messaging is why companies shouldn't be sending account authentication or login codes by text message. Because this shit is being intercepted. And not only could it be intercepted, I'm overrunning my tongue here. Not only could it be intercepted by this go-between company, you don't know if it's being intercepted by a man-in-the-middle attack, which is extremely easy to initiate.
I would argue that independent of any company, the fact that SMS as a protocol is not secure is the reason why you should not be sending banking statements over it. I would not throw out SMS and say, everybody has to have everything encrypted, because it's not necessary to encrypt something like, hey, I'm going to be running 15 minutes late. Can you hold dinner? Like,
no, I agree with
you. That is not
a
message that needs to be encrypted. And it's,
no, but
SMS
a message saying
fine.
This is my fucking username and password. This is my account number. This is the credentials to my fucking life. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Should not be on SMS by any stretch of the imagination. And the fact
I agree. And
technology companies
factors.
Aren't doing good enough due diligence in their own supply chain by using companies like this is a big problem.
I think you're right. Two-factor is one of those buzzwords that gets, you know,
it makes people feel warm and fuzzy that they're doing what they need.
Well, it's also something that, you know, security experts, people who, you know, walk around being evangelists for security companies saying, you need to be more secure. Look how crap your system is. And my company just happens to sell a product that does this. If even if you take the salespeople out of this, and two-factor has became a buzzword that everybody just kind of looks at and says, oh, this obviously means security.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Nobody ever, because again, layer of abstraction over the entire concept of security. Security is one of those subjects that has ways of completely blowing up through layers of abstraction. Every time you put an abstraction and say, I don't want to think about the details of security, let's just wrap it in a fuzzy term like two-factor. And then you don't think about the fact that, it's being implemented through plain text on a bathroom wall, which is about the security level that SMS is. Yes, okay, you are absolutely correct. You've got two factors of security, but what you don't have is security.
And that's exactly the problem. Again, because if you don't have a way to make sure that the information that's going from point A to point B is secured so that somebody can't just grab it, be like, there it is. I have to say, some companies are actually starting to get their shit together and figure it out. I mean, this made me really sick. Google said that their Gmail would move away from using text messages for security and anti-spam and would instead ask users to scan a QR code when they logged in. Fuck you, Google. I'm not scanning a fucking QR code. Oh, yeah, that's so much safer because we all know those QR codes can't be spoofed or anything.
Well, again, right. The devil's in the details. The devil's in the details. QR code is nothing more than data. It's what does that data represent? Is it cryptographically secure? All of these things, like I said, security is one of those things that you cannot gloss over it with a layer of abstraction. You have to know. In fact, all the way down to the algorithm, You do not know something is secure until you are able to trace it all the way down to the algorithm. What is it doing? How is the data moving? This is why threat models are so difficult in engineering, because people don't want to think about, okay, this data is being transferred here. It's being stored in a variable here that has not, you know, that waits until this point before any sanitation is done. And then it goes into this algorithm. People do not want to, like, that hurts people's brains. So they don't think about it. They're just saying, oh, we need two-factor. Well, how are we doing two-factor? Well, everybody else is sending text messages. So that's two-factor. That's probably good enough.
And that's the thing.
Scanning a QR code
good enough
might be.
Isn't good enough. That's the
problem. It is good enough for a lot of things. I'm going to give you a completely different take on your example of the banking app, and that is maybe the problem here is not SMS, and maybe the problem isn't even. I mean, telling people to use an insecure method is actually worse than not using any kind of authentication at all, simply because you are sacrificing convenience and you're not getting anything out of it if it's an insecure method. So that's bad. But even if you're sacrificing, like, I am almost alone amongst pretty much every engineer I talk to, and I'll probably even get some argument out of Phoneboy on this one, that I believe that you do not throw maximum security at everything. The level of security that you need must be commensurate with the importance of what you're securing. And by that, and I'll give you a concrete example, when I log in to a forum of, you know, Linux help forum, so that I can ask a question about the KDE screenshot utility, and I have to create an account for that for some God knows reason. And usually the reason is they don't want AI to be posting, or they don't want bots, or whatever it was. But I have to create an account for that. I can use a fucking dictionary word for that password. And it is not, what happens if my account on that site gets compromised? What am I out? Oh no, somebody can post as me, which is an identity on some random forum somewhere and has a reputation of nothing because it was a user who doesn't know anything. Okay, that's not actually that you, okay, it's probably annoying for the site owner because, you know, somebody will use that account if you crack it as, but you get the account banned and then problem solved. Why is it necessary for me to pull out my phone and give a phone number and get a two-factor authentication and an authentication app so that I can log into a forum and ask a question about a screensaver?
Yeah, I got you there. And that, by the way, you quoted it right out of the CISSP stuff, right? It's actually something they talk about in this. Yeah, so this concept of you should apply the appropriate security for whatever it is, right? Because, you know, one of the things, you know, when we talk about security, there's security, but there's also, like, you can't secure everything, right? So what's acceptable risk, right? This is, you know, there's a whole sort of, the thing in cybersecurity about risk management, knowing what the actual risk is to something, what the exposure is, what would happen if something, you know, you kind of have to stack rank.
But in practice, people don't do that. In practice, people are like, well, we need to throw two-factor at everything.
Yeah. And by the way, I agree with you, the forum example, although if you use the same username and password, if you use the same login credentials.
Well, now you've entered retard land. Yes.
Yes. If you use the same credentials on multiple sites, then yes, that's one of those things that, yeah, this is where you look at Troy Hunt and Have I Been Owned and everything.
But if I use the same credentials on 10 sites that I do not give a crap about, because all of these open source projects, every one of them has their own PHPBB. Again, I don't care. The problem is if I use the same credentials on a site, weak credentials on a site I don't care about, and then use those same weak credentials on somewhere I do care about, like, you know, a banking app. Okay, that's stupid. We don't do that.
But people do, and that's, you know.
I know.
That's why we have these top 10 passwords. Yeah, I mean, that's why we have these. But, you know, password is still the number one password people use, you know.
People are morons, but one of the things, and again, this is where I break with most of society, I do not believe that I should be punished because most people can't find their asshole with a shoelace. And I'm not even sure why they would want to do that, so I don't know where that metaphor was going.
The problem with which, although I would like to weigh in, I find the problem to which you were speaking before about a message saying, hey, I'm running 15 minutes late, doesn't need the same security as a message saying, hey, you know, this is my username for XYZ platform. Now, yes, we know end users are the idiots who fucking do that instead of like maybe calling your friend and saying, this is my fucking username so you can use my account. That's where the problem is you don't have a protocol that will separate the message that says, hey, I'm running 15 minutes late, and just say, oh, that doesn't, you know, that can be clear text. It doesn't matter. Well, as opposed to the, here's my username and password for the Peacock account.
Now we're back to that secure design problem I was talking about a half hour ago.
Yeah.
You need to design your system. And if I may cycle all the way back to the idea of, I am trying to find a way to authenticate to this banking app on my Fondle slab so that I get, you know, I need a secure way to identify that I'm me. Maybe we haven't come up with a secure design for it, and that's why people are using insecure.
But there
and
is.
There's a dedicated authenticator
app that you can use.
There are absolutely better designs, but maybe if you are now not just talking about your bank account that has $30 in it, maybe if you're talking, if you are the national security advisor to the president and you're, trying to communicate plans for when you're going to bomb a country or something.
Nuclear launch codes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if it's really that important, then let me back up a minute and throw something like, how do you secure it on the Fondle slab? How about you fucking don't?
Yeah, that's exactly it. How about you fucking don't?
You know what? Do you know what I have for banking on my phone? I don't. You know what I do? If I really, I have security on my desktop. If I need to communicate with my bank, I use the security there. I don't use the security on my phone. Now, there are certainly problems with that. That is an engineering challenge to keep secure there. But I don't need access to my bank account balance when I'm walking down the street. I can do that from my own home. So I have cut away one of the one of the nodes on the threat model. I lopped off by saying, I'm not putting this thing on my phone. You know what? If I absolutely need to do a money transfer, I am old enough that I remember how to put my shoes on, go outside, walk to a physical building, and talk to a human being. No technology required, and it happens to be pretty damn secure.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, though. What do you do when you do log in through your computer and it still sends the fucking code to your phone SMS?
Well, then I bitch and whine on a podcast, obviously.
Yeah, well done. I mean, seriously. I run into this in my industry because I'm in the cybersecurity industry and I work for a vendor that makes cybersecurity solutions, right? So you talk about secure design, right? And it's really just amazing to me how Microsoft, right, which we talked about earlier, they have the most CVEs of probably anybody. I mean, them and Cisco, it seems like.
You don't say.
Yeah. Well, and this whole secure, it's just like when we did in the pilot, that one thing, like we had to in order to allow access to an application hosted on Microsoft Azure, you have to allow access to every application and every data set on Microsoft Azure because that can't go wrong at fucking all. Yeah,
that's a fucking problem. But they literally kneecap you because in order to do one thing, you have to agree to do everything. And
that's poor security design.
It's extremely poor security design, but how do you get around it? What do you do?
My default when you say, how do you get around that? My first thought is, do I have the capability to fix the problem? If the answer is no, and then my next question is, can I live with this security level that I have? Can I live with the risk, the threat that is being pushed on me from this outside thing? If the answer is yes, then I make the same decision that countless C-suite people do and say, ship it. And if I say I cannot live with that risk and I don't have the capability of fixing it. Like Microsoft will not give me a customer access to re-architect their entire Azure system. Well, then what I'm left with is don't fucking use that system. Like, sorry, you just lost a customer because your design does not fit my needs. A lot of people
A lot of people will not take that. They would rather submit and take
one of the plagues of amongst engineers and users all across the world is they do not recognize there's always the possibility of if you're not comfortable with what this technology is trying to do to you, then don't fucking use it. People don't get that. People are like, well, but I have to stay in communication with this person online that I met once in a bar, and you know, therefore I have to download the app for it. No, you freaking don't.
Oh, that, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we were going with that through, you know, because we were using a Messenger for Facebook Messenger for a few things, and we, you know, when we had an issue with one of our pedal heads, at that point it was like, okay, this we made a decision at that point, to remove the threat model that could come from those things, remove the app from the phone, right? Because it's that which you do not digitize or that which you do not put on your phone, you don't have to worry about. Well, you don't have to worry about securing your phone to prevent it from being
the people that I work for. It is a very small independent company, which contracts to a larger company. When they post the work schedule, which is the important part, they have a WhatsApp group. Now, lots and lots of communications go on, but the vast majority of them, who gives a shit? And the most important stuff is handled in person, because I have one of those jobs that actually has me traveling to a location and meeting people face to face. And I find, you know, despite that might harm my technology cred these days, I find that to be far better for the soul and, having human interaction kind of beneficial. Anyway, they post the work schedule in their WhatsApp group. To this day, I have never installed WhatsApp on my phone because I want it to remain my phone and not Facebook's phone. So I don't get the work schedule. So what do I do? Well, I know that the work schedule has everybody showing up between, 10:40 and 11:30. Okay, well, I'll just show up at 10:40 every day. After a while, they figured out that I was there at the beginning every single day. They started putting me at the beginning. Shit works. Look, we solved the problem without technology.
And you never had to install WhatsApp.
And occasionally they bitch at me. They're like, well, I sent you a message on WhatsApp. I'm like, I don't have WhatsApp. Send me an SMS. Oh, okay. And so every once in a while I'll get an SMS. It's like, we don't need you to come in until 12:30. Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
But you still didn't have to install WhatsApp.
Yeah.
That
SMS was insecure.
Right, because it wasn't that fucking important that someone knows you're coming in at 12:30 as opposed to 10:40. I mean, truly.
Well, and I think it's I'm with you. And then, we talk about the fact that that your printer is properly scared of you because you have a shotgun pointed at it, right? I mean, this is the only way to treat a printer is with a shotgun.
Well, yeah,
exactly. So,
why every device that you trust will have a removable battery or some other manual way of saying, I am the frigging user, you are the computer, I will kill you if I have to.
Yeah,
the day that we as people became slaves purely to the fondle slabs in our pocket was the day that we lost the ability to pull the battery out.
Yeah, that's the one thing I hate about modern smartphones. And by the way, I have replaced the battery in Tom Collins' smartphones. It ain't easy to do, but it can be done. It's not something.
I have a hammer that can take the battery out pretty easily.
Yeah, that also. absolutely.
You know what I hate most is the fact that when smartphones came into being the mainstream, those normal flip phones that didn't have all that extra face technology and bullshit, they quickly got phased out. Now, yes, I have been told that you can actually procure a very basic flip phone that will do nothing but texting and calling. And honestly, the texting involves having to hit a button between one and three times for the letter.
I mean, that's sort of what I did to my Samsung smartphone by removing Google Play.
Yeah, that pretty much that pretty much makes it a dumb phone. Yeah, but let's face it. None of you know.
I would like an explanation on that. I'm going to explain actually
because the problem is that's actually really hard to do, right? Because most smartphones have all these security mechanisms. This actually gets into another topic that I think I've actually got kind of a story on it because although I didn't, it's basically Apple's adding a kill switch that could change your next iPhone because of course phones get stolen because of all the data that they have on them and all that stuff. And so they already have this feature in Find My that you can kill it. I don't understand what the next kill switch would do, but I mean the fact is that yeah, we have all
if they don't like what you're saying, they can kill your phone.
Well, that's and see to me, right? Having all I think where we went wrong in some cases is it is actually connecting things to the internet, right? Of course that didn't stop anything. I mean, you read Clifford Stahl, the cuckoo's egg and all that. And you saw what that was the state of cybersecurity in the 80s. There wasn't any because nobody realized that there was any security issue. But
because, among other things, there was a culture of, in general, people trust each other.
Yes, this is true.
Absolutely true back then.
And because it was such a new thing, nobody thought about the fact that password 123 would be fucking insecure because it would be a logical thing that someone would say, oh, password. Well, obviously the word password. Oh, I have to make it more secure. Let's add a couple of, characters in succession. Not a lot of thought went into it. They did not know for whatever reason. After having read that book, the one of the few things that I could take away from it is nobody ever thought about the fact that not only could you reach out and connect to something out there in Cyberland could reach out and touch you too. In return.
Absolutely. Yeah, reach out and touch
you. And then you got a psychologist asking you to show you on the doll.
Well, of course, yeah. But I mean, this is a problem we have, right? We don't. I mean, one of the problems I have with modern smartphones. But you asked the question about how can you uninstall Google Play? Well, actually, they make it really hard to do, right? You generally have to do shit like root your phone, and the bootloader has to be unlocked, and all this other stuff, right? They make it.
Wow, that's just nefarious.
Yeah, they on Android. So on Apple, good luck doing anything. Although you can jailbreak your iPhone probably still, but there's less reason to do it now. Although I'm sure it still happens. But on Android, jailbreaking happens all the time, and that's why so you have phones that can install other operating systems, but these operating systems, unfortunately, the hardware in these phones are so it's so unique per phone, right? They don't all share the same hardware, especially on Android anyway. And then you have to have all the software and the drivers and everything. It's just good luck if you want a phone that does not have Google on it, good luck is all I have to say. Is why I hate Android so bad. But the
hilarious thing, which has been true for about 5 years, is that if you want a phone that doesn't have Google on it, the one that is easiest to do is Google Pixel.
Yes, this is true.
The phone made by Google, because they're the ones who actually, they publish the AOSP specs and the hardware actually follows them. Every other vendor has some kind of unpublished proprietary hardware crap that has to be worked around, which makes it harder. So I just find that.
Yeah, and then Progo points out though that Google has actually gotten rid of they're removing that.
Yes, they have. That's
which is
ATN story that I didn't do.
Yeah, but I think it is. But this is the fact is at least on I will say at least on Linux, right, with a Linux Windows computer an Intel processor, right, with those you can run Linux on just about anything, but at least those things you can blow it up and install whatever you want on it. Yeah, modern equipment. I don't know. The Tom Collins stuff, smartphones, pretty much every sort of consumer tech. We don't own our shit, even when we buy it. Right? They can turn it off at any time. These kill switches that you think, oh, this is a consumer benefit. No, it's not a consumer benefit. It might be a consumer benefit, but it's also something they can use to control you and your thing. So yeah, none of this stuff is good. And this is why
I actually have an example of that.
Okay.
That comes from my former. Career, if you will. I won't mention the trucking company, but it's one of the big carriers that actually has a kill switch in the truck where if you exceed the, again, electronic log time that you're allowed to drive, they will flip that switch and kill your truck. Now, here's the problem. If you're driving down the road, if you're in a fuel island, as soon as that clock expires, they flip that switch and it does not fucking matter. There have been many trucks that have been marooned in fuel islands because they have flipped that switch on them and they have no way to move until that 10-hour break has elapsed. It's gross.
Yeah, it's just
this is why the all of the rants that we've had for this entire show, you're putting software in places that should not have software.
Heard that.
You have, I was talking about, I need a hardware kill switch, which I absolutely believe everything that I have needs a hardware kill switch, because if the software stops working for me, I am not going to trust myself to, or, my system device, whatever, my truck to a software off switch that you were talking about the Find My stuff. That is a software off switch. Every phone today, software off switch. What you do when you turn a phone off, you are not saying, I'm turning this phone off. You are asking the software very politely, could you please turn yourself off, because I do not have the ability to do that. Like I said, hardware kill switch on my PC. If I have to, I crawl under the desk and I pull a cord out of the wall, and whatever the fuck my PC is doing that I don't like stops immediately.
Yep.
I can't do that with my phone. That's why I said taking the battery out. We're putting software in everything, in the fridge, in the air fryer, in the TV, in the truck,
they don't get upgraded.
Vacuum cleaner.
There's no need to fucking be able to take a fucking photo of your refrigerator interior to know, oh, I need to pick up this, and this, or have the thing automatically send you a message saying, Bob, Bemlet
is in the chat room right now talking about having a Wi-Fi enabled mouse trap.
As in like an actual mouse trap that catches rodents.
Yeah. It has some electric leads and it electrifies rodents.
Oh, yeah, because the environmental animal activists aren't going to flip out over electrocuting
animals. I don't think Bemlet gives a shit what the environmentalists
say. The environmentalists.
But I also
know
that he does not connect his mousetrap to the Wi-Fi, because it seems to electrocute mice just fine when you plug it in. But who the hell is putting software on this thing? Well, it's because everything needs an app.
I assume it's because it wants to let you know when it has actually electrified one of these rodents so that you can dispose of it.
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for Bemlet on this one, but I think I have a working nose that would tell me
when. Yeah, gross.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so
funny to me, the old school snap that you'd hear in the middle of the fucking night was enough alert that got one. Yeah, exactly. The ever popular is funny.
Yeah.
It's
funny. You connect this thing to the mains and suddenly, all of the lights in the neighborhood dim. You're like, got one.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well,
somehow I just don't need my barbecue to let me know when it's warmed up.
Yeah, I could have actually used when I lived in Wisteria Lane.
So. And by the way, this trap that I'm envisioning now is not just for mice. It's also for home invaders.
I literally, because Phone Boy said he could use one of those when he was on Wisteria Lane. I was going to say, Phone Boy, I don't think your ex would have fit in that fucking trap.
Jesus Christ.
Scale it up.
Oh, yes. Well, anyway.
Now, not to say that connecting her nipples to some car batteries.
Oh, my God. What other stories do we have?
I don't know. I don't know. I think we.
This is why you fucking degenerates tune in to this show, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So give us your other one, Phone Boy.
Yeah. So I actually did. I kind of, it was Apple's kill switch would completely change your next iPhone. I kind of looked at that.
So that means that Sir Bemrose needs to lavish us with the other AI annoyance he has.
AI is annoying. Okay, next.
Okay. No, I think, we don't have any more stories. That's actually cool. If we don't have any more stories, actually, we had a great conversation here. I think, honestly, I don't think I've got any.
Hold on.
Let Sir Bemrose talk. It's his turn.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. You know what? I'll just give you the headline. LG TVs, the OS, they are using AI in their television OS, when you plug in your TV to your Wi-Fi and suddenly it decides that it's no longer a television, it's an ad platform in your living room, they are using AI to select ads which, quote, more closely align with viewers' personal beliefs and emotions. They're using an AI marketing startup called ZenApps, which is providing the software. This sounds like a total fly-by-night operation. But the idea is LG wants to make the ads that are shown on your TV's home screen in the ad-supported channels that they provide and, quote, elsewhere in the OS, also known as everywhere in the OS, they want those ads to be more tailored to you. And if anybody has seen the movie Idiocracy, this is where we're going with these smart TVs.
That's where AI goes as Idiocracy. Because this is, you know, this is probably where we're going to end up. I think this is a good clip to play here.
Yeah,
I screwed that up. Sorry.
But one particular scene in Idiocracy, if you're not familiar, has a guy watching the show was absolutely stupid because it was like somebody getting kicked in the balls. But the thing that was really notable about it was that the show was about 10% of the screen, a small rectangle right in the middle, and everything else on the screen all the way around this big screen TV was nothing but ads.
Progo put a picture of it in the chat. So real.
Yeah. And the thing is that movie was prophetic, but you know, Mike Judge did the movie, who, by the way, he's, you know, goddamn prophet on wheels. The only thing he screwed up was he put it 500 years in the future. What he didn't realize was, no, we're like 15.
Yeah, we're now.
Yeah, just remember what else came.
That movie is 19 years old, and we're already there. You take you go buy a brand new TV, 60 inches, you put it on the wall, you plug it into your Wi-Fi like they tell you, and you've got that image that Progo just pasted, where your entire thing, you have just put a fucking ad billboard in your house that is controlled by people. Yeah, that is controlled by a company, it's by people who are not you. You have given somebody else the keys to your consciousness by displaying what they want, their propaganda, their hypnotism, their messages. If you're lucky, the only thing they're beaming directly into your psyche is go buy our product.
At the very least.
Oh, you know, when we talk about the in-shitification that AI is presenting, yeah, they're injecting ads into that too, so good luck.
Yeah, they are.
So the technology, which actually took me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, is called psychographics. And the best description I found for it was actually at a Salesforce marketing page, which describes psychographics is the science, and actually there is a science behind it, of collecting people's moods, attitudes, and personal biases in order to feed that into an ad algorithm. The section that I found most interesting, because the Ars Technica article that talked about these LG TVs completely omitted, did not even mention how the hell you get all of this data that's being fed into the AI about my moods and everything. You know, I get, you know, you obviously have every channel I tune to, everything that I watch, every, you know, everything the TV displays, and you know how long it was displayed and when I hit the channel button. But how do you get everything else? I don't know that our TVs have quite got to the point where it has a camera pointed at you, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happens soon, where it just points a camera at you and starts using facial recognition to read your mood. The most benign psychographic data collection technique, which actually I'm totally cool with because it's voluntary, was surveys and interviews. Salesforce was big on that one. That's about where they got. But the other methods that they described were monitoring social media conversations, comments, engagements. If I have to plug my Facebook credentials into my fucking TV to watch a football game, then the thing is going in the trash. But that, I think, is where we're going. They also talk about web analytics, which if you browse on your TV, you probably do that. But more, you know, more than that, they probably have some way to link the account to the phone in your hand, where if you do all your browsing there, they've got everything that you've done. They might even have your social media. And then at some point, like I said, the end game is probably they just point a camera from the TV pointing at you so they can read your facial expressions when a particular scene comes on in the show. They can tie that to, oh, he smiled when the, you know, when the multicultural person with pink hair popped on, and he frowned when the white dude came out and, you know, didn't immediately bow down to the, obviously this person, we can sell hair dye to them.
I mean, you're not
the whole thing wrong. Makes me sick.
It's interesting because I actually have a story that kind of sort of aligns with that. And again, you know, get your rain galoshes, folks, because water's wet in this, because I found a story about how 40,000 cameras from bird feeders to baby monitors were exposed to the dark web. Duh. If you fucking point something toward the web, if it's web facing at all and it has a connection, you can pretty much be assured that somebody can look back at you while you're looking out. I mean, seriously.
This shouldn't surprise you. I am that guy who has... there's absolutely no camera whatsoever plugged into this computer, but I have a laptop, which, I'm not kidding, literally has a piece of tape over the camera.
Yeah, I have actually a camera slide thing that keeps my camera, that if you access my camera, all you're going to get is literally a black screen. So I'm not surprised at all, I actually appreciate
that. We're talking about the difference between a software off switch where... You know, with these phones, for example, you have to kindly ask it, dear software, could you please not record me?
No, this is a physical thing. Switches,
you put tape on it. Off switches, you put a physical block in there. You have a hardware off switch for that camera. That is the way to go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Ryan. Yeah. This is a physical slider.
I know, I've seen them.
Attached to my camera. Yeah, that was one of the first things.
And the only reason
why
it slides back and forth is you can't commit to not being on camera. You're like, maybe I do. Oh.
Nope, I actually don't slide it back and forth. It was just the easiest thing as opposed to tape. It looked better because it was company branded from Phoneboy's company.
Oh, look who cares how their computers look.
Yeah, I'm a total diva. Are you kidding?
Yeah, if you've seen her office, actually, she's.
I have an old Dell from 2011 that I still use that has a bunch of bumper stickers attached to it.
Yeah, I've got several laptops like that, but also.
Well, the point at bringing this particular story to the table for you guys, even though it is a water is wet situation, is I don't think people understand just exactly how deep this particular problem runs. It's not just somebody taking a peek at your inside of your house because you left your laptop open and they've hijacked your camera and can see the layout of your house to be able to burglarize it. This is actually going so far as to have reached the Russian-Ukrainian war, in that the Ukrainian government actually asked their citizens to turn off all their broadcasting cameras after the Russian agents hacked into them at a condo association in a car park, and they got the cameras to manipulate in such a way they controlled them to point to nearby infrastructures, which they used to create a strike. I mean, this is not just a home computer issue. This is extending even to wartime.
Call me selfish, but I'm honestly more concerned about the stuff going on in my own house.
And I'm not going to argue that point. People think that having a Ring doorbell camera or a security camera in their house, any camera that is internet facing, period, dot, can be hacked, can be put on the dark web. Your information can be put out there even via these cameras. You can geolocate.
By the way, if you want to get the in-home, the exact home layout of most tech enthusiasts' place, you do not have to convince them to add a camera to their house. They probably already have one in there, but it's even easier than that. Go to the dark web and get one of the breaches, the data breaches from Roomba, who probably has all of the floor plan layouts for millions of homes.
Oh, for sure. I'm sorry. As much as I love tech and I totally love my Dyson, you're never going to convince me to get a robotic fucking thing.
I've had one of those, and they don't really. They're more trouble than they're worth, honestly.
I don't see how they're worth the exorbitant amount of money that they charge for them.
At least my Dyson sucks in a good way.
Yeah, on Dyson the topic, by the way, happy. I'm pretty sure your fucking Roomba could not climb up the stairs and vacuum them the way your Dyson can, and it has no forward-facing IoT connection.
If it can, it can kill you in your sleep. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, well,
I will so say, on the topic of this was really cool, impractical, but cool. And also I wouldn't care as much about the security. I came across, I'm not kidding you, in the wild, a Roomba that was a lawnmower. It was doing the same thing a Roomba does, but it runs outside. And it was little automated platform running back and forth across the lawn. And I'll tell you what, I am not nearly as worried about some automated system mapping my lawn as I would be inside my house. Because, you know, castle doctrine. The only thing that I looked at it was like, why had nobody, you know, why had I never thought of that? Why is that not the obvious thing? Somebody obviously came up with it. And then my second thought was, this is incredibly impractical for anything but a very small, very, very flat lawn.
A small and flat lawn.
Well, I live in a place with geography. Flat is not something that happens most places.
I've seen Sir Bemrose's layout there. I can just see one of those Roomba lawnmowers trying to tackle his lawn. It would look like a complete 5-year-old hack job on a haircut.
Oh, so you've seen what my lawn looks like after I mow it, too.
Oh, my. All right.
You know, I think this has been great fun. Does anyone else have anything to bring to the table? Because at this point,
I think we're approaching the 2-hour mark.
Yeah, we are.
How do we end these things? Well, I don't have any ending clips for this, but I would like to thank you for joining us on this.
What kind of outfit are you running here?
I know, right?
I know exactly. Well, I haven't written an ending for this, but
shoestring and slipshod.
Yes, I thought it was an asshole with a shoelace. I don't know.
Hey, is now the right time to check the recording?
I think we've got recordings here. I'm looking at both of my recordings. I see you talking. I see the little. Anyway, it's all good. Yeah.
All right.
I think we're good.
In that case, as a Ben, this is Sir Ryan Bemrose signing off, and when next time we're back, I'll be just as cynical about computers.
Yeah, and I'm Phone Boy, and you know, I try to be optimistic, but I have a lot of experience that suggests that well, anyway, but I'm Phone Boy nonetheless.
And I'm Phoenix, and I still think AI is shit. You'll never convince me otherwise. And even though I'm not a full-on dudette named Bernadette yet, I don't think I'm going to change my opinion on it. So with that, we're going to say thanks for joining us for 2.5 Bens.
All right. We'll have some. Well, I'm sure we'll have some clip to go.
Yes. Cue the outro music.
You know, yeah. I think the outro music is the following.
Go away, Baton.
Well done.
All right. There we go. I think. Yeah.